it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm ready to get my booking so I don't have to play on Christmas. How are you doing?
Listen, I'll be podcasting until they drag me away from the mic.
We hope everyone else is staying safe, staying well, wherever you are. This is our last pod before Christmas.
It is.
We're going to be broadcasting on Christmas Day, though. We've recorded our Christmas Day episode and our Stadio's 2023 episode. So on the 25th, just a reminder, it will be the football things to be grateful for in 2023. We had some amazing submissions, so thanks to everyone who sent them in. There were a few that were a bit late, or there were a few that we couldn't get to, so apologies, but we tried to read out as many as we could. But yeah, thanks to everyone who sent them in, and we hope you enjoy that episode. And then on the 28th will be the Stadio's. Today we're going to talk about the ECJ ruling on the European Super League case. And then we'll just talk about some of the midweek football. I reckon we'll get into it after this.
Let's do it.
All right, man. As the
resident.
As the lawyer among us.
Oh God, yeah, you wouldn't believe it. Anyway.
God, we're in so much trouble.
Oh, we're in so much trouble. Okay, so here's what happened. Just this morning, you'll be hearing this today, just this morning. The European Court of Justice is the EU's top court, and they found that UEFA, in blocking the breakaway European Super League, actually acted in abuse of its dominant position. So for it to do that, for it to sanction clubs for breaking away or trying to break away with the European Super League, was illegal. That's the overall finding.
Mm.
So basically, they're saying that FIFA and UEFA can't set conditions on organizations that want to set up rival tournaments. They can't set conditions. So this is the sort of quote. Euronews did a great report on it. Any such power exercised by FIFA and UEFA as gatekeepers over rival operators or operators of rival tournaments must be subject to transparent, objective, non-discriminatory and proportionate criteria to stop any ideas or concepts of conflicts of interest on part of the sports governing bodies. So what that means in essence, it sounds like it is a big deal, but also it's not necessarily because I don't think anybody looked at the European Super League when those clubs tried to break away and do it and thought, oh, that's illegal. I think everyone in football kind of knew, or most people in football were like, yeah, like UEFA and FIFA do enjoy a monopoly. And this has been the problem for years. I don't think anyone thought it was illegal. I think people just thought the idea of a bunch of clubs literally snatching their ball and running away with it after all these grassroots clubs have built the game and all these fans have built the game, it felt like a moral robbery, but not an illegal robbery, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Just because something isn't illegal doesn't mean you should do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot, and there's a load of those things. It's a load of those.
Should we read the UEFA statement?
Yeah, definitely.
UEFA takes note of the judgment delivered today by the ECJ in the European Super League case. This ruling does not signify an endorsement or validation of the so-called Super League. It rather underscores a pre-existing shortfall within UEFA's pre-authorization framework, a technical aspect that has already been acknowledged and addressed in June 2022. UEFA is confident in the robustness of its new rules, and specifically that they comply with all relevant European laws and regulations. UEFA remains resolute in its commitment to uphold the European football pyramid, ensuring that it continues to serve the broader interests of society. We will continue to shape the European sports model collectively with national associations, leagues, clubs, fans, players, coaches, EU institutions, governments, and partners alike. We trust that the solidarity-based European football pyramid that the fans and all stakeholders have declared as their irreplaceable model will be safeguarded against the threat of breakaways by European and national laws. We're recording this ahead of a press conference that they've got planned for this afternoon, which I imagine...
A lot of complacency in that statement.
Yeah, there is. It's a little bit kind of like... This just reminds me a little bit of what we were talking about at the time, where our governing bodies in football, like FIFA and UEFA and et cetera, the right model to govern a sport like football? Yes. Do those organizations need modifying? Yes. Are those organizations operating at full efficiency, and are they, I don't want to say fit for purpose because that feels like a hashtag proper football man thing to say, but are they? Probably not. Right. Well, definitely not. And we've seen with stuff like handling of certain competitions, awarding of competitions. Let's just stick to UEFA for now because we don't even need to get started on FIFA. But there is so much wrapped up in this that's just like, yeah, actually, this is what happens when you think a bubble can't burst.
Right.
And I think that, like you said earlier, I don't think a lot changes really, apart from you get to whip up a little bit of momentum for the people who are still trying to push the Super League, because it wasn't the ECJ and it wasn't FIFA and it wasn't UEFA that stopped those clubs from pursuing it. It was actually fan protest.
They absolutely kicked off.
Yeah. No, in England specifically, I don't think we've seen a collective fan protest like that.
It was unbelievable. Ever, it was really incredible.
Because fans in England aren't really known for having, like, A, being listened to, but also having that power. Like, for example, we talk about this in the Bundesliga all the time, about how there's a lot of collective protesting among fan groups, you know, like in
just fans shutting down AGMs.
Exactly. Just in the Dortmund Bayern game, you know, Dortmund were losing and they both unveil a banner at the same time going after the same thing. So I think that collective sense of actually having a voice
empowerment,
the Super League was really quite powerful. And I think that spooked a lot of clubs because they were like, oh shit, actually. We didn't know that this bear would ever wake up, and we completely poked the collective bear, and it is like, it's
can I be honest?
Our heads
The only interesting thing about the European Super League for me as a project, the only interesting thing, I want to know the rooms that it's drawn up, and I don't mean in some kind of conspiratorial way. I'm like, this sounds like the kind of thing you draw up in a ski lodge or in someone's mansion. Like, I want to know just how detached from reality. I mean, it sounds like they drew it up on a space station, because there's no one who's been within 2 miles of a football ground who thought that was going to fly. It is an incredible example of a plan that absolutely imploded upon first contact with reality, isn't it? And you're completely right. I mean, you said it earlier, you were saying it today, we were talking in preparation for the show, like, it was fan outrage that killed the European Super League.
Yeah.
Because everyone knows there's a lot wrong with UEFA and FIFA. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
But to come in and propose something so nakedly self-interested, to propose something which made UEFA look benevolent. I mean, it takes some doing to promote a breakaway league that makes UEFA look like it's operating absolutely and entirely for the good of the game. But the European Super League was so disgusting as a concept in the form they drew it up that people had such a visceral reaction. It was like watching football fans actually vomiting, like spiritually vomiting, I've got to say.
And they've drawn up these...
That's their problem.
Yeah, and they're drawing up these new proposals for it. This company, A22, is now the company that is driving the reformed Super League plans if and when they happen. I do find it highly amusing, though, that their chief executive, Bernd Reichardt, said, we've won the right to compete. UEFA's monopoly is over. Football is free. Now the clubs will not suffer threats and punishments. They are free to decide their own future.
You know what that sounds like? It sounds like when Loki is talking about subjugating people on Earth and going, what people really want is freedom from freedom. Because, you know, when the European Super League, like everyone knows what it was. It was a closed shop, Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think the drawn up, the new plans, if they were ever going to go ahead with it, are just not going to be like that. But it just sounds like, you know, one of those like Champions Cup tournaments that happens in the summer.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
it just sounds like one of those. And I don't think, you know, there were rumours that I think the new football governance bill in the UK will actually stop Premier League clubs from being able to join something like that. I think if it interferes with, I assume if it interferes with domestic competition, because I'm not sure if they can, with this ruling.
I don't think you can actually stop people playing. You can't stop people actually playing in those tournaments. But if they leave, if those clubs leave and do it, here's the problem that the European Super League is always going to have. Players love competing for the Champions League.
Yeah.
They love it. They love it. It's like the place to be. It's the actual, one of the reasons PSG has struggled not to, if you think about PSG, right, and the players they've got there, the money PSG have got, think of all the great players that haven't gone to PSG.
Mm.
If you actually think about that, I know they got Messi, I know they got Neymar, I know they got Mbappe, right? But there's a hell of a lot of players that said no to PSG because they didn't like the idea. People like competing for leagues and Champions Leagues. They want to win it for a club where they feel that pedigree. And actually, weird enough, PSG is more attractive now because of the way it's more organically building. Ethan Mbappe, great story, like, you know, the brother now playing with Kylian. PSG is more attractive now, weird enough, I think, than it was before because it feels more organic and it feels like a sort of an actual, you know, a project from the grassroots or something, so to speak. So the biggest problem the European Super League is always going to have, this guy, you know, A22 can talk, terrible name, by the way, they can talk all they like about...
Listen, if I was A24, I'd be having a word.
Dude, well, there it is. You know what there I mean? It is. They can talk all they like about free to decide your future, but you got to get people excited.
Well, I think this is the thing. So what are we doing this for? Are we doing this to free football from itself? No, because it's like the live golf stuff, right? The whole line about stuff like that is growing the game. I want to grow the game of golf. No, please stop insulting my intelligence. Just say they're paying me a load of money.
And have you noticed how the players who said that have had no backlash? The players that went to the Saudi Pro League and were like, yeah, it's money. No one's actually gone for them because everyone was like, because everyone's ever seen the attendance figures at the Saudi Pro League games, but anyone that's paid attention to it. Yeah.
We say this a lot on Stadio where like quite often football finds very valid problems and applies completely the wrong solutions to fix those problems. And I think that this is again something that the European Super League stuff and this ruling has brought up in that, yeah, there is a massive financial inequality amongst football in Europe. This isn't the way to solve it. Hopefully we'll have spooked them a little bit more into fixing up because stuff like at a FIFA level, they're rolling out stuff like a 32 team Club World Cup every 4 years in the middle of the summer that literally no one asks for and nobody needs, right? No. You've got this other Intercontinental Cup thing coming in. You've got the Club World Cup as it is. Like, there is already too much stuff. UEFA made all of these changes and killed the Champions League in its current format, basically because of all of the Super League stuff. Now, we don't know what it's going to be like, right? I remember when we got asked about taking away away goals, like, is that going to make the game better or worse? And we don't know because we don't know what next season's Champions League is going to be like. It might be amazing, right? But it was fucking fine.
Yeah.
It was fine. Like, the top clubs just wanted more and the federations, like, gave them it, basically.
And the top clubs wanted to guarantee their participation.
Like, actually, the late stages. Fuck off. Like, and I said this as a club, as a fan of Arsenal, like, we're both fans of clubs who were involved in Super League, right? Like, if they want to do it, actually, just go.
Yeah.
Still, I don't think they will, right? I don't think that, this is the thing, I don't think this actually changes much now. I just think it means that in theory they could if they wanted to, but I don't think they will because the hassle's too, like, it's too much, man. It's too much.
Can you imagine? Like, here's the thing. joining the Saudi Pro League for a huge amount of money is one thing, because you're doing it out of sight, right? Fundamentally, you're earning money out of sight. If you joined a European Super League, can you imagine the players and what they get for that? They join the European Super League, so you're basically operating in plain sight, and everyone is just seeing you trousering all that change. I mean, the selfishness, the one reason I think people get away with the Saudi Pro League in terms of all it is because basically it's offshore. And because, but you know, in terms of, if they did the European Super League in Europe, I think the pressure would be unbearable actually for most players. And the other thing as well, in defense of, it defends those players too. So you've got like, when you've got Bernardo Silva coming out, and Bernardo Silva is a player who I think any fan of any club can agree, that man puts in a shift. That is a hardworking footballer who does not mail it in. Bernardo Silva coming out and raising huge concern about the burden on players, the physical burden. And it's funny because if you look at the players who've spoken out, right, they are some of the most hardworking footballers coming out. It's not the kind of people stereotyped as shirkers. It's the absolute, Bernardo Silva is the closest thing you'll get in football to a blue collar type in terms of his work ethic. And when he's coming out and saying that, you're like, this is a serious problem. And we keep talking about burden on players. We keep getting all these reports about ACL injuries and all the rest of it. Something actually does have to give.
Yeah.
And because this thing about just, you know, you keep loading more and more, like football is not at this point a load bearing structure. It just isn't. And the European Super League, I think, if it isn't that, there'll be something else in a couple of years. There'll be another sign that football basically is overburdened.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe, but because,
I mean,
because
I'm actually a little bit more like, I just don't think this is going to be something that's really going to gain momentum anymore. I mean, we've got the European Club Association statement
dropped. I don't think the Super League will. I think that reform, actually. I think...
Well, yeah, but I don't think it'll come from A22.
No, God, Jesus, come on.
Do you know what I mean?
No.
The European Club
Association... They're just a symptom.
Yeah, the European Club Association released a statement saying the ECA, representing nearly 500 professional clubs across Europe, takes note of the judgment issued by the European Court of Justice today. To be absolutely clear, the judgment in no way whatsoever supports or endorses any form of Super League project. Since the legal case was brought 2 years ago, major progressive governance reforms have already been put in place across the ecosystem of football in Europe and worldwide, including new UEFA rules for competition pre-authorization, and in particular reforms under ECA's Memorandum of Understanding and Joint Venture with UEFA and FIFA, signed in September and March this year. Through ECA, clubs today are already at the heart of decision-making in relation to the competitions they participate in. In short, the world of football moved on from the Super League years ago and progressive reforms will continue. That's a bit of a zinger line, that, actually.
Yeah.
Most importantly, football is a social contract, not a legal contract. All the recognised stakeholders of Europe and European and world football, spanning confederations, federations, clubs, leagues, players and fans, stand more united than ever against the attempts by a few individuals pursuing personal agendas to undermine the very foundation and basic principles of European football. ECA will continue to work with UEFA, FIFA, and all recognised stakeholders of football to develop the game positively and progressively, founding on the principles of sporting meritocracy, inclusiveness, open competition, and genuine solidarity. These principles are at the heart of ECA and at the core of the European sports model, in which all levels of the pyramid benefit and prosper. All levels of the pyramid benefit and prosper. Show me you're working and I will be sold. But again, this is just what it is. This isn't a binary thing. I think that if this fixes up the federations and associations to be better and do better and actually genuinely tackle the things that they're pretending that they're going to tackle because of this and the things that they pretend to stand for because of this, then great. But I'll wait.
I will absolutely wait. Yeah.
Do we really need to say anything more on that, or are we done?
I think we're done.
Yeah.
Don't like the Super League, actually. Anyway, listen, moving on.
Let's talk about some football.
Oh, wow, yeah, from football.
Yeah, we do a football podcast.
We do, my goodness.
What do you want to talk about?
Bayer Leverkusen.
Ooh, let's do this.
Let's just be very quick. So they beat Bochum.
This is why we do a podcast.
There it is. So Bayer Leverkusen beat Bochum 4-0. In the midweek, and they will go to Christmas Day top of the Bundesliga. Fully deserved. What a team.
Not quite Herbstmeister, though, because they...
Not quite. No, not the winter champions. No, not yet. But what a team. Xabi Alonso doing big things over there. They're losing Victor Boniface for the Africa Cup of Nations. Doesn't really matter because they've got Patrick Schick back. First start in 14 months. Scores a hat-trick.
Yeah.
Seamless transition.
I don't think that was a penalty, though.
No, me neither. Me neither.
He basically stands on Riemann.
Yes.
And Riemann gets up and is like, look, he stood on my arm. And it went to VAR as well. And I was just like, come on, man.
And the fact that Schick is back and the fact that he's scoring goals like that means that Leverkusen have something didn't have in previous years, which is a little bit of luck. Because to have to swap out Boniface and bring in Schick in form like that, it shows that maybe things have turned for them. We'll see. I mean, they've certainly played the most exciting football of the Bundesliga so far. I think even Bayern fans would admit that they owe a huge, huge debt to Harry Kane. But the fascinating thing about what Leverkusen have done is that they've just provided such a fluidity and a style, and players who've gone there, not only players who've gone there, but players who sort of come through the ranks there, just look liberated.
Yeah.
Right now. Yeah.
I think they might be, they're moving into maybe Kusen territory.
Yes, I think that's...
It's looking good, because if you think Bayern have that game in hand against Union, who beat Köln, by the way, this
good
week.
Good win, that.
Massive win.
Good, a lot of talk about finishes.
Yeah, a lot of talk about Steffen Baumgart leaving, but I'm not entirely sure if that would be the right move from Köln, because they've got quite a lot of stuff hanging over them at the moment. Hopefully the break will be enough for them to turn it around.
As Don Draper said in Mad Men, sometimes you got to dance with the person that brung you.
Ooh.
That's how it is, you know? Oh. He brought them to the dance. Listen, brought Köln to the dance. They've got to keep dancing with him.
So basically Bayern have got that Union game in hand, but even if they win that, they're still going to be a point behind. So there's wiggle room for Leverkusen.
Yeah.
They will drop points throughout the rest of the season. There's no doubt about that. But they're so far 16 games in and unbeaten, and they are absolutely
what a flying. Start.
Xabi Alonso is incredible.
Yeah.
He's incredible. Like, genuinely incredible.
What a mind. What a mind.
Harry Kane's goal, unbelievable.
Oh my goodness, against Wolfsburg.
What a goal.
Lord. Yeah, so Bayern beating Wolfsburg 2-1, but the goal from Kane. Hey, listen, man. Picks up edge of the box, 30 yards out? And just clips it. One of the cleanest strikers of all. The first time I realised Kane's brilliance, actually, was when I saw... It was early, like he was just early at Spurs. You know, he hadn't really become, obviously, what he is now. But just, I remember talking to friends about it. It's like, the man absolutely... The technique is, like, flawless.
Yeah, he's so
good. It was like watching one of those, like, you know, those players coming through at Wimbledon hitting, like, perfect ground strokes. Mm. And like, you're like, why is that guy in the qualifying rounds? That guy's unbelievable. And then of course he just went to that level. But yeah, the goal last night, catch it if you can.
Mm.
Keeper certainly couldn't. Against Wolfsburg, glorious strike.
Dortmund drawing with Mainz at home again.
Not a good result.
No. Have 3 draws and a defeat in their last 4 games in the league.
Mainz seem like they only really do that against Dortmund at the moment. Then they're not a good side. Not a good side.
Leipzig drawing away at Werder Bremen. But can I just shout out my game of the week, which was Heidenheim-Freiburg?
Oh, listen, also, like, shout out Heidenheim because...
They're up to 9th.
This almost is a microcosm of their season. Like, Heidenheim, you know, for those struggled to get up a couple of years ago because lack of firepower, but they've found their resources, haven't they?
Shout out Frank Schmidt, man. And also, shout out Seb Stafford-Bloor, who went to Heidenheim and chatted to Frank Schmidt. I would thoroughly recommend going and read that on The Athletic. It was really, really, really good.
Had like a cup tie energy this match.
Oh, it was such a good game, man. Hüller giving Freiburg the lead very, very early on. And then Dinci equalising just after half time. But only like 10-15 minutes later, Hüller scored a penalty for Freiburg. And then one of our faves, Tim Kleindienst, getting an equaliser 6 minutes from time. And then just the cruelest Wednesday night in December own goal by Matti Ginter. Cross comes over. And I'm not sure if he gets a slight touch of Atabolu, but it's one of those, like, it bobbles in the 6-yard box on a pitch that isn't amazingly flat anyway, and it hits Ginter's left foot, then his right foot, and goes in stoppage time at the end of the game to give Heidenheim the win. And that actually puts them up, they're 4 points behind Freiburg now.
Incredible.
Just amazing.
That's such an impressive run. If you look at Heidenheim's resources, and also just the goal threat they've had or haven't had over the last couple of years. That's a really impressive position. I mean, 25 goals in they've got as well. That's a pretty good haul, and it stands them in good stead to stay up, which is super impressive. Yeah.
If you haven't seen that, go watch the highlights. Yeah. It was amazing. In fact, just treat yourself. Go watch the whole game.
Oh, there he is, the ultra.
Listen, it's Christmas time. Put your feet up. Treat yourself.
Bundesliga.
Let's go to any Carabao Cup thoughts.
Oh yeah, I have sympathies. A friend of mine, good friend of mine, a Port Vale fan, so she's in mourning, I suppose, because they got done 3-0 by Middlesbrough at home. So they don't go through. Middlesbrough do go through to the semis. Very exciting for them.
Yeah.
Other thoughts. Good win for Chelsea over Newcastle. Showed some resilience there. Those are my main thoughts on it.
Newcastle Everton, are knackered, don't they?
They do. They look.
But also, can we just talk about Callum Wilson's goal? Because that literally looked like, you know when you play, I said this in the Wright's House group, but you know when you play FIFA with someone, yeah. Or not, sorry, when you play EAFC with people, but maybe you're playing against someone who, I think it's now called eFootball, formerly Pro Evo, then PES, and the buttons are different.
You're playing the...
Yeah, that Chelsea defence looks like someone who, at the start of a game, who is playing EAFC and they're pressing the wrong buttons. And they're like, oh shit, I've got it on Pro Evo, I've got it on PES buttons.
It was so, yeah, that's exactly that, because Callum Wilson was running a defence where two players were in front of him and all of a sudden
really
there was no one.
Anything.
Yeah, he just kept running in a straight line and they just evaporate. It's very rarely you see a defence evaporate in front of a forward like that. Yeah, it was not the best defending, but you know, Chelsea found the resilience to pull it out.
Hmm.
And one on penalties. Trippier having a tough time of it at the moment, I think.
Yeah.
Fair to say.
Yeah, he's not in a great run of form.
He is not. And then Everton going out to Fulham in a shootout.
Mm.
And I had some sympathy for Everton, and part of me also thought, it's always great to win a trophy, but part of me also thought, can there be a challenge sometime when you're in a cup tournament and you're looking to survive and there's just that distraction?
I've got a theory about Everton. I'm going to put it out there.
Go for it.
I think they're going to go deep in the FA Cup. That's my theory.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because by the time, as long as they get through that first round, the third round, sorry.
Right.
Who have they got? They've got, all right, well, they've got Palace away. So actually that might,
oof.
They can get, if they beat Palace in that FA Cup tie, I think they have a chance of going deep, because there's like what, a 5-team title race, 6-team title race, 8 teams, 9 teams trying to get into Europe this season. I sounded like a there's like a 5-team title race, a 6-team title race, 7 teams, 8 teams trying to get in Europe. Just a revamped version of old McDonald had a farm.
Yeah.
Premier League had a title race. E-I-E-I-O.
That's going to become a thing, actually.
We need some time off. I mean, Everton are basically what, the 8th or 9th best team in the Premier League?
Yeah. In terms of...
Like, they actually are, right? They actually are, if you think. Like, if they had their points back. So I think they could potentially go for a good run in the FA Cup. That is my prediction.
That's bold. That's a bold, because the FA Cup is like... It's not a league table. Like, it's a tougher one to call.
Yeah, but something, I don't know, man.
No, I like it. I like it. It's a good take.
Carl's amnesty take. There you go. It's my amnesty take of the season. Back to the Carabao Cup.
Mm.
You want to talk about Liverpool?
Oh my goodness. Great win over West Ham. Curtis Jones.
I love
giving
it when
Steve McManaman vibes.
I love it when a Musa take comes good.
It's giving Steve McManaman vibes for me, because if you look at like Steve McManaman at Real Madrid, doing those multiple jobs in midfield, where McManaman, you know, that he was the danger man for ages with Ferguson, and be like, watch McManaman. Curtis Jones to me is someone who can do a more disciplined job if he has to, but who you can unleash. And if you unleash him, and I always was fascinated when, you know, early sort of months under Klopp, how Klopp would just trust him at particular times. And he was absolutely the cartilage of this victory against West Ham. Impressive throughout, surging forward, finding gaps, fine finishing. Mo Salah got his customary goal. And some of the day, who was it that said, we don't appreciate Mo Salah? I can't remember who it was, but they said, like, his production level is prodigious, and he's kind of fallen off the headlines in terms of conversation. I think that's actually fair, because his brilliance is so sustained that it's almost become background noise. You know, you kind of like, when you took your eyes off Messi for a couple of years, you know, as difficult as that was, but every now and again, you're like, oh, Messi's just turned in another, so like, what, 40-goal season? Like, it's nothing. Mm. Well, in Messi's case, 50-goal season. So yeah, Liverpool just looking really, really impressive. Some really good goals in this game, including the Jared Bowen one. We always say, like, the goal on the other end of the thrashing is often a banger. It's often the best one. And I'm not quite sure Bowen got the best goal of this game, but it's definitely a competition for one. So yeah, Liverpool just looking super smooth.
Super smooth.
And they also, as well, the fascinating thing is, it's always fun to see which clubs are desperate for this trophy.
Yeah.
And Liverpool really want it. That's always interesting. Szoboszlai again with a banger too.
Chelsea versus Middlesbrough in a semi-final of a cup competition has given me big mid to late 90s energy.
Yes, no doubt. I love that.
And then Liverpool against Fulham in the two legs. Are we expecting a Liverpool-Chelsea final? Or another Liverpool-Chelsea final?
I don't want to see that.
I want to see Fulham-Middlesbrough in the final.
I want to mix it up.
Yeah.
Fulham-Middlesbrough, wouldn't mind seeing that. But just, I mean, any combination other than Liverpool-Chelsea, I would say.
Interesting.
Just to mix it up, you know?
Just to mix it up.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to shout out La Liga quick?
Barcelona with a good win over Almeria, who are bottom, but who made them work.
Made fucking hard work of it, didn't
they? Really did, my goodness.
Barcelona are confusing.
I mean, that sentence has been true for the last, 15 years?
Sergio Roberto, Doppelpack.
Yes.
Saving Barca.
Yes, very much so.
Mm.
Their keeper, Fernando, looked really useful. Yeah. Looked really useful last night. Pulled us some great saves.
Yeah.
But yeah, good win for them. I think for sentimental reasons, just very quickly drop in on Ligue 1.
Yeah.
To mention PSG's 3-1 win over Metz. Kylian Mbappe got three birthday presents. The first two were goals that he gave himself. The third present, the loveliest present, his brother, Ethan Mbappe, making his debut for PSG at the age of 16.
That's so cool.
That is such a great story. There was a picture of Kylian next to his brother, but obviously like, he's 9 years older than him, so he was like tiny. And then to see him now, all grown up, 16 years old, coming off the bench, it's kind of amazing. And to make it through football, I was talking to a good friend of the podcast, Justin Salhani, the other day, wonderful journalist.
Justin.
And just talking about the quality of football in and around Paris is just off the scale. To make it through that into the PSG first team, and this isn't a team that suffers fools, like he's not there on, that's not nepotism. That boy is there because that boy is good. And we've seen PSG bring through Zaire Emery. So I'm excited to see what Ethan Mbappe does. But I just thought, you know, a great story in the middle of all the cynicism.
Yep.
It's a great football story.
Can I shout out, because that's it for before the winter break for Liga.
Yeah.
And three wins in a row have pulled Lyon out of the relegation zone.
Yes, they got a 1-0 last night, wasn't it?
Oh, 1-0, yeah. 1-0 against Nantes, 1-0 against Monaco the week before, 3-0 against Toulouse before that. And they
really strong stuff.
They won three games on the bounce, and they've only won four all season.
Big because Nantes took a couple of places above them, so good in terms of the head-to-head as well.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So PSG top in the winter break, followed by Nice, and then followed by Monaco. It's interesting seeing Nice up there. Farioli doing a pretty good job since he's arrived.
Mm.
Just a quick shout for Adi Hütter, who's doing a really good job at Monaco. They're third.
Lovely coach as well, Hütter. Yeah. Really good coach.
Who the first person to unify the Stadio community. By wearing a roll neck and a cardigan on live TV.
Yeah, that ended the Civil War, didn't it?
It did. It did.
It created a singularity.
Everyone put down their knitted goods after that and hugged. We all played a game of football in no man's land. Roll necks for goalposts one end, cardigans for goalposts the other end. It was beautiful.
Roll necks for goalposts. Oh God, the things we come out with. Jesus Christ.
Bad week for Moussa's Italian teams. Well, a couple of them. Frosinone dumped Napoli out of the Coppa Italia 4-0 in their own yard.
Cooked them. Terrible result.
Their own yard. Now, they've rotated quite heavily, Napoli, and then brought the big guns on. It was too late by then.
But still, yeah.
And Bologna beat Inter in extra time.
By an old boy. Well, not old boy. He's a young boy. Joshua Zirkzee with two assists.
Yeah.
What a player. This is the guy. It's funny. When I watched Xerxes for Bayern, when he was there, I remember thinking, he is too good to be on the bench. like at an elite club. He needs his own club. And it was that difficult position of wouldn't get there as a starter, but absolutely deserved his own platform and has been wonderful this year. And it is the old cliche, a good touch for a big man, but he absolutely has that. He has that Zlatan thing where he's like a 9.5 sometimes. Finishes well, but drops off and links the play beautifully. And if he carries on like this, and this is not to sort of, first of all, respect to Bologna, incredible win at the Miazza, so at Inter, big, big win against a team that is very much in form and a team that loves playing in the cup. At the end, you could see Inter were gutted to lose this. They love winning the Coppa Italia. And Simone Inzaghi is one of the best head-to-head managers in the cup competition. Bologna really underlining and confirming why they're a force in Serie A this year, why they're fourth in the table. But also beyond that, Zirkzee will be attracting a lot of attention, I think, in the months to come across Europe. Yeah. And rightly so.
Yeah, definitely. Just a quick shout out for some of the Champions League, Women's Champions League games last night. Ajax beating Bayern 1-0 at home, which is a big result for Ajax.
Huge, yeah.
PSG beating Roma 3-1 in Rome. Which means that that group is as Ajax top, PSG second, Bayern currently going out, they're third, and Roma bottom, but it's so tight. Ajax on 7 points, PSG on 6 points, Bayern on 5 points, Roma on four. Chelsea beating Hecken 3-1, goal for Sam Kerr and two for Aaron Cuthbert was enough. Chelsea are top of that group. That means they've overtaken Hecken to go top. They're on 8 points, Hecken on seven. Paris FC are on 6 points.
Good win that. Yeah.
Was a great win beating Real Madrid away in Madrid. Real Madrid at bottom of that group, having taken only a point from their first four games. Some games tonight. Lyon go to Bran. Eintracht Frankfurt host Benfica. Barcelona host Rosengård. And Slavia Prague host Pulton. Is there any other football you want to talk about?
Yeah, just to flag up, Manchester City will be taking on Fluminense in the World Club Cup final. Fluminense beat Al Ahly in the semi-final and Manchester City beat Urawa Red Diamonds. Both fairly straightforward wins, as you'd expect. Rodri commenting that this would be an important win for Man City to take away the very bad feeling at the club at the moment, just about, you know, the sliding results. What, one win in six they've had, City? They've had a fairly tough run of games, I think, in that spread of time. So,
yeah,
and not bad for them as a club to have, I think, a mid-season wobble. But the ominous sight of Erling Haaland and Kevin De Bruyne on the bench, sights no one wants to see.
No, God.
Yeah. You know that scene in the Two Towers when the two hobbits are playing around and they drop that pot down the well, and the massive demon comes down the corridor. I feel like that. And just watching Haaland and De Bruyne on the bench, those demons just waiting in the wings to come and devour you. That can't be a pleasant sight for the teams. And it can't, we've said this 1,000 times in the podcast, for all cities resourced, any club in the world misses players of that quality. And it's, I think once they're back in the side consistently, we're going to see what this title race is really about. But yeah, that will all come later. But for now, let's focus on the World Club Cup final. That would be a huge deal for Fluminense to come through and win that.
It would be amazing.
I mean, just for their fan base, I'd like to see it. You think about the talent drain. You think of like Endrick is going to go and join Real Madrid from Brazil. Like, when is the last time a huge European prospect went the other way? You know, we know it's all financial, which is the frustrating thing for South America. You think about the talent that used to stay in South America when there was more financial parity. So to win this tournament for South American teams, I think, has always meant, yeah, despite the financial dominance of Europe now, we still have the quality. And I think it's important for that reason to reassert that.
I reckon I'll do this for today.
I think that's right. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Don't forget, episode going out on Christmas Day, and there'll be an episode on the 28th as well. In the meantime, we hope everyone's staying safe, staying well, and don't forget to check the Stadio Archers playlist on Spotify. If you want some tunes to listen to over Christmas, there's also a Christmas playlist we did a couple of years ago on there. Feel free to...
Some cracking tunes on there.
It's also a bit weird though, so feel free to ruin some Christmases if you want to put that on there.
Not as weird as the Fairytale of New York. What I absolutely love the song that Left Field has become a Christmas banger. It's beautiful because it sums up perfectly the bittersweet nature of the Christmas occasion, I think.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch that episode of The Bear on Christmas Day, I think.
Really? Doing that to yourself.
What a show. What a show.
It is.
Don't forget to check the Stadio Outros playlist on Spotify, like we mentioned. This episode we're playing out on a tune taken from a lovely album. It's the 15th volume of Spiritual Jazz, and it's all a tribute to John Coltrane.
Oh,
this tune
goodness.
is literally called Train by Camilo Garcia. It's been a while since we played out on a jazz thing. Anyway, anything you'd like to add, Musok Wonga?
I'd like to wish everyone a spiritually jazzy day. What else can we do? You can never have too many spiritually jazzy days.
I'm going to hit up the label and I'm going to be like, can you do the next volume, Spiritual Jazz 16, offside?
Yes.
No, onside. Spiritually jazzy onside. Anyway, enjoy this one, everyone. Much love. We'll be back with you on Christmas Day.
See you then.